name and asked me if I was related to him. I told him I didn't know. I'd have to look up his family tree, but friends say I should have told him immediately that I was, but he didn't get rich by giving everybody who had his family name, you know, a big check. So he finally told me, David, I'm just so tired. I could tell his eyes were tired. He'd come from a CNN interview, and his secretary grabbed him by his arm and said, Bill, you have to run. You have another appointment. And he said, David, there's never any time to rest. And I thank the Lord I don't have his job. I would not want to be strapped with the load that he carries or with the vision that he has to go for of total control of communications. It's much better to serve a coming king. And I wouldn't switch places with him for $15 billion. What I'm going to share with you today, I want to give a little background. First of all, that I've been a denominational employee most of my life, except for the last few years, when I've been serving the denomination as a volunteer. My father and grandfather served all their life as ordained ministers for this beloved Advent movement. And I feel grateful for the opportunity to be a volunteer because I believe in volunteerism and I direct a large group of volunteers. It's one of the most rapidly growing group of volunteers that ADRA has in the world. They send me a constant stream of people. They say, I don't know. Well, many times we're decreasing the use of our volunteers. I believe that we should multiply it by 100 times. I'm somewhat of an activist in the church, so you'll also forgive me if I share some new ideas with you. I'm grateful that I'm not an employee anymore, that I'm a volunteer. I feel so free to share those with you. But I've also taught graduate business classes for Andrews University while I was at Caribbean Union College for their MBA program. And large organizations today, of which our denomination is part, need to be able to react to the conditions around them. It's not a coincidence that Bill Gates is growing rapidly and IBM is dying. You have to remain flexible as possible and as flat as possible, and the Seventh-day Adventist Church is not flat. So to react to the need, when I share ideas with you, please be aware that I don't think it's an accident that God allowed me to be here. Elder Gordon shared with me that they had a speaker scheduled, but he received the call to go overseas. And as I share these ideas, in no means take it as criticism, please. It's ideas to help our organization become more flexible and meet the need. And it's growth because of the love for the church. But to stay as we are when times are changing so fast is fatal. So please accept it in the right spirit where it's coming. And I'm going to share some ideas with you, Elder Gordon. And I have been chatting some, and I'm excited about where this union is going. But at the same time, I have a burden on my heart that I want to share for not only just, it's not just for the Southern Union, it's for God's people in general. And so please take it in the spirit from which it comes, because there's some things I'm going to mention today that that address direct things that I think that for a long time we've needed to change. But it's because I love this church so much, and I'm going to be part of it till the day I die or till Jesus comes. I'm going to address risk today. In teaching the graduate business classes, my business students, we point out that risk and return are proportional. The higher the risk, the higher the return on the investment. Many of my students were non-Adventists, bank managers, worked for the Ministry of Finance, worked for National Security in Trinidad and Tobago and throughout the Caribbean. One of the things they said is not only have we learned, we've also had a change in life and attitude through this class. It's about giving, not receiving. It's about being willing to take risk in order to serve others. It's about helping the country, helping the church, helping your neighbors grow. That's what it's about. It's not about getting a graduate degree so that I can earn more money. Our pioneers. Let's go back to Martin Luther. Elder Gordon mentioned Martin Luther's birthday. He stood before the August Assembly. Here I stand, I can do no other, so help me God. He risked his death. He voluntarily went. And God protected his life. John Huss did the same thing, and he lost his life. They were called out in the middle of the storm to go meet a need. They had to leave their children. And they got onto the horse-drawn carriage, and they rode to the ice storm to get there. And James and Ellen White risked their comfort in order to reach the needs of the church. Fernando Stahl in the Inca Union, Peru, Bolivia, Ecuador, was told that if he came to those mountains, that they would kill him. He went. They surrounded him many times with drunken, rioting men on horseback. They burned down several times the roof over his head. They stoned him, but he kept on going. Risk. My grandfather, who just died last week, was buried, served as a pastor for many years in Graysville, Tennessee, and all over Kentucky and Tennessee in the south. I just found out that he was instrumental in locating the property for Lower Brook Academy. One of his church members that recently became an Adventist was threatened with death if he started keeping the Sabbath. They were soon notified that since he worked at a sawmill, he had accidentally tripped and fallen on the saw, and he was cut in two. After I was hijacked in Mexico, and I'll tell a story later on this week, I met a man serving prison time. I studied theology at PUC, had gotten a master's degree, and a doctorate in education. Had served as the first director of the Antillean College when it was still in Cuba. Had gotten bitter with the church, left the church, left his wife, left his family, turned his back on it, worked in tourism for a while in the Caribbean, then went to Colombia and got into drug trafficking and did that for 20 years. His father was the secretary of the South American Division. His name was Olson. I haven't looked back at the church all my life, he said, but maybe God sent you here so that finally I could get my act together. He was 78 years old. He showed me the bullet holes in his legs. He told me how he and his father, when he was a young teenager, had been preaching in Colombia, and they fired on them. One time, the priest came out of the church, the cathedral door, raised his hand and said, "Glory to God," and out of the door came running men with machetes. The other pastor, who was preaching along with Elder Olson, ran down the road, and his teenage boy helped drag his father along. They chopped him on the back many times. The other pastor tripped and fell. They caught him. They chopped him into little pieces and delivered those pieces in a gunny sack in front of the Adventist church. And this is what we do to all Adventist pastors who come here. Risk. Today, there's 8 missionaries being drug around Afghanistan. They went there knowing that it was high risk. This month, quite a few mission trips have been canceled overseas because it's too risky to go overseas. We have been notified by the General Conference, many of our conferences, that it's better not to go overseas at this time. It's too risky. Risk management. A very responsible and important part of our church. Sometimes we have confused management by risk. I would like to propose to you that today that it's not about management of risk. It's about management by mission. It's not going to get easier, you know. It's going to get harder. What we don't do today, we're going to do through bloodshed tomorrow. It's not eliminating risk that we're all about. The Waldenses, knowing full well they may never return home, went down anyhow, leaving their wives and children, and many of them never came back. As the times get tougher and more dangerous, it's not about decelerating, it's about accelerating. It's about realizing that the time has come when risk cannot be the one. We need to reduce risk, yes. We need to operate at the safest level, yes. It's not safe to carry the gospel to the world. It's not. It's not safe to operate beyond your financial limits. It's not safe to walk out on the street anymore. In fact, I might propose to you that going overseas is the safest thing you can do right now. I have a kind of a radical message. I'll be straight up front with you. It's about accelerating as times get harder. It's about spending more money when we have the least. It's about selling what we have in order to place in God's work when funds are decreasing. But you know what? That's the fastest way to get more money. If you want to see how fast money can flow in, start making the decisions that show everybody that we're willing to sacrifice to get the job done. The confidence level will go up and funds will start pouring in. The more you give, the more you get. Yesterday I read from a Christian Service about a call to war. You know, there's not an insurance company in the world that'll insure an F-15 at war. They don't insure warplanes. They don't insure submarines and warships. When you go to war knowing fully well you may lose, and you probably will lose, some of your assets. But you don't sacrifice mission because you might suffer loss. In fact, you place all your assets in a mission, even if it takes loss, in order to accomplish it, because the alternative is even worse. Losing all your assets to the enemy. Losing a war is a lot worse. Page 82 of my little favorite book, Christian Service. The Church of Christ may be fitly compared to an army. The life of every soldier is one of toil, hardship, and danger. You're not in danger? You're not a soldier. A sleeping army of Christian soldiers, what could be more terrible? Sleeping army. I was shown that God's people are waiting for some change to take place, a compelling power to take hold of them, but they will be disappointed, for they are wrong. We don't have to wait for some compelling power to take care of us before we finish the work, to take control of us. It's already happened. We've had plenty of warnings. If we don't listen to the prophets, even if one rose from the dead, it wouldn't change us. We already know that we live in the last times. We are told to put everything on the line. And it's a life of danger. It's not safe financially to manage the way God asks us to manage. In the MBA program, we tell our students one thing, and sometimes we make the mistake of living by what we teach them. The way we are to run our finances in the church is not anything like world management of resources. It's the opposite. Another favorite book of mine is Gospel Workers. Dr. John Youngberg showed me this one, Uncle John. He and I, my parents and the Youngbergs worked together in Bolivia when I was a child, and Uncle John called me aside and he said, I want to read you this. Those who want their work to be made ready at hand, who desired a fixed amount to do and a fixed salary, who wish to prove an exact fit without trouble of adaptation or training, are not the men that God calls to do his work. How much will you pay me? What are my benefits? Those aren't even questions that we should ask. The questions are, what do you need? Can I fit the need? Here am I, send me. There are men who flatter themselves that they might do something great if only circumstances were different, while they make no use of the faculties they have at hand. I have learned over the years in this experiment that we've made with God, don't ask for any more while you have anything left. Why should I ask God for money while I still have some? Now, I know the denomination has policies. Sister White addresses policies, and you'll hear about it in a minute. We have policies. And policies are made to generally run the church, but they're not made to control every circumstance. You have to adapt the policies to the need, not the need to the policies. And it's the time is here when it's time to do some changing on our policies. Unions can change. And I'm sorry, divisions, I think, are the ones that set policies. And the GC has policies. Conferences cannot do that, but it's time that you're the leaders right here of this union. And you influence policies at your level. And you influence policies that apply to the whole union and the division. Many of you sit on those committees. It is time that we adapt our policies to meet the need. We're in crisis right now. Opportunities exist now that will be twice as difficult and twice as painful tomorrow. Today, we can do something about them. The cause of God demands men who can act quickly and act instantaneously at the right time with power. If you wait till every measure of difficulty and balance and every perplexity you meet is gone, you will accomplish but little. You will have obstacles and difficulties to encounter at every turn, but with a firm purpose, conquer them or they will conquer you. And this is one of my favorite ones. I'm reading page 133, 134, and 135. If anything is to be accomplished to the purpose, it must be done at the golden moment. The slightest inclination of the weight and the balance should be seen and should determine a matter at once. Is that the way we work in committees? The slightest inclination and the balance should determine a matter at once. We have an opportunity. It's a golden opportunity. And while we sit there and consider the alternatives, the opportunity goes away. Long delays tire the angels. It is even more excusable to make a wrong decision sometimes than to continually be wavering, to be hesitating, sometimes in fighting one direction, sometimes in another. I have been shown that the most signal victories and the most fearful defeats have been on the turn of minutes. You want to be a conquering church? Ask the Lord to give you opportunities, and when you see them, you move immediately. Don't ask how much does it cost. If God gave the opportunity, He stands behind it. It's not the devil that gives us opportunities to save souls. It's God. And if he gives them, all the riches of heaven stand behind that opportunity. We will be at our strongest when we have our least. Rapid movements at the critical moment often disarm the enemy, and he is disappointed and vanquished, for he expected more time to lay plans and work by artifice. I love that one. I just love hurting the enemy. And working fast does that every time. When God gives an opportunity and you move on it, the devil doesn't know what to do. Because he expected to have time to deal with it, and he doesn't have time, so he has to back up and look for plan B. Every plan may be well laid to accomplish certain results, and yet a delay of a very short time may leave things to assume an entirely different shape. The great objects which might have been gained are lost through quick lack of foresight and prompt dispatch. Caution up to a certain point is required, but hesitancy and policy on particular occasions have been more disastrous than would have been a failure through rashness. You get the picture. The golden moment is right before us. We are standing at the golden moment in history. The shot has been fired over our bow. We as Adventists, as administrators and decision makers and influencers of the Adventist movement have a chance today to recognize where we're at. We got a lot of fat still. We got reserves. We got to have reserves. We are told to have reserves. But guess what? Our policies need to adjust themselves to slimmer and slimmer and slimmer reserves. So that when the time comes, when we have to walk away, our reserves will be zero. I'm not saying do that now. I'm not saying don't follow policy. I'm saying adjust the policy. Make the policies fit the times that we live in, the opportunities. The next time that a crisis happens of the import that we had on September 11, it may restrict severely your cash flow or ability to move cash without previous approval. We don't know what it's going to cause. It might even prevent you and prohibit you from sending funds overseas. Right now, we can move. Extra assets, buildings we're not using, either put them to use or sell them. Vehicles, what you're not using, get rid of the fat. It's time to get rid of the fat and get ourselves in shape as a church. It's an Adventist movement we're talking about. And there's people dying, waiting for the message. We can do it now. Duke Wellington was called before a group of missionaries, by a group of missionaries. And being the great general that he was asked to evaluate their plans for mission service. And they said, Duke, what do you think about our plans? Will they be successful or not? He looked over their plans and he said, gentlemen, it is not the responsibility of soldiers to determine if the plans are going to be successful or not. It is the duty of soldiers to obey. If I read your orders correct, it is go into all the world and preach the gospel. And gentlemen, you have the orders. Will we be successful? Will we have to give our lives? Will we go bankrupt? That is not our business. We have our orders. Now, in a Christian life, everything is a balance. It's a balance between a human and a divine. Yes, we have to be astute, like the unwise steward. We have to think ahead. We have to make strategies that will accomplish the work. We have to do it with God's leading and lay our plans at His feet. We must do everything in our power to do it right and manage the resources correctly. But we are not allowed to put resources on a shelf. That's not what resources are there for. Resources are to be used, and yes, part of wise management is putting resources aside to have a margin there. But we have way too much. Have you ever heard of the 2% solution? Some of you might have ever read Sherlock Holmes sometimes. It's a story about a little poison solution that eventually killed somebody and Sherlock Holmes had to solve the crime. I would like to propose to you that God has a 1% solution. The year before last, I was scheduled for Alumni Weekend at Southern as one of the key speakers, and I did not realize, nobody realized, but 2 weeks before I was to speak, somehow the Lord honored me by name, by the Southern Alumni Committee, naming me Alumnus of the Year for the year 2000. I was caught by surprise and aghast that they would reach 200 miles deep into the jungles to find a missionary to name Alumnus of the Year when there's so many renowned people around. But I realized later that is why Southern is growing so big. It's because they have looked for missionaries and those who hold up. This year, Elder Reed was named Alumnus of the Year. You look for the kind of spiritual people that hold up the standards and say, young people, this is who we want you to be like. And I preached that weekend. They gave me the choice of speaking in the collegial church or speaking in the gymnasium to the young people, and I always choose the young people. So I saw a lot of gray hairs come over. I understand that Dr. Beats had to tell the young people this time, you know, tone down the music a little bit this week. But I love young people. And I spoke on the 1% solution. It occurred to me, as I was reading about Gideon, that 32,000 men is what Gideon had. And God said, get rid of them, get rid of them, get rid of them. And he got left with 300, a little bit less than 1%. And God said, that's enough. What I need is quality, not quantity. I was in Lima, Peru. I worked at the Inca Union for 6 years, nearly 6 years there, as director of computer services. And I was standing in front of the union office in this big metropolis. And there was 4 lanes of traffic and this way and 4 lanes this way. Right in front of the union office, the electricity was out, and they were all tooting their horns. Nobody was moving. And I was sitting out there with the youth director, who's now the union president down there, and I was sitting outside with him just chatting, and I said, Melchor, have you ever seen me act as a policeman? He said, no. I said, watch this. And I went out to the middle of the traffic, and I told him, I said, the only car that could move, there was only one lane I could move, and I said, lady, turn right here. She said, but I don't want to go right. I said, but you're the only car that can move, so you have to turn right. She says, but I don't want to turn right. I said, if you don't turn right now, I'm taking you to the police station. She said, yes, sir. And she turned right. That line started moving, then another one. Pretty soon, all eight lanes were moving pretty nicely. And I went back and I said, what do you think? You do things I would never do, he said. As I was studying for that sermon, the 1% solution, it all of a sudden hit me. We have nearly 14 million in our church today. And God only needs 1%, 144,000 to finish the job. All he needs is quality. You want growth? Receive the Holy Spirit. You want to see an explosion in church membership? Get your life together. Put mission on a line. Pour your assets, everything you have, into that mission, and this, the Holy Spirit will report out, and that church will go vertical, the growth. Revelation 7 tells us that before the four angels release the winds of strife, 144,000, be it literal or symbolic, the number is not so important as is the quality of those people. The 144,000 will be sealed on their foreheads. And I think there's very few of you that would disagree with me today that the four winds are being released today. What does it tell you about the sealing process? Almost finished. In our church today, one in every 88, if I understand correctly, it's out of this Advent Three Angels movement that the 144,000 will be. In this room, there's some right now. One in 88 is going to be part of that. Is it you? Is it me? I don't know, but it's time that we get on our knees and say, Lord, use me in such a full way that people can see Jesus loving. It's total dedication. It's everything on the line. Not just individually. I'm speaking individually first, but I'm also speaking as a church, as a denomination, as a corporation. It's time that our corporate image and policy fit the model of where we're going. We have to try to act horizontal and flat to meet the need that's out there. When an elephant moves, it moves heavy and it's hard to stop it, but it's hard to get it to move. A flat organization reacts to yesterday's accident. Today, our policies reflect yesterday's. A vertical organization takes a long time to move. It can do a lot once it gets moving. And we're pretty vertical, so it's time that we start. We are, in fact, I'm not discouraged at all. I'm seeing it everywhere. My division president, Elder Israel Leto, is like a father to me. At a division, Inter-American division, and he, from his personal salary, sends money every month. Anytime I need advice, I know who to call. My union president down there, Brother Trotman, dedicated and consecrated man. And I see God having key people in every level of this denomination. There's people who are also pulling the opposite direction. But I'm not discouraged by that. God has His people at every level too. And I have confidence that this church is going to tighten up. Very soon a crisis will hit, and those of us that don't have it together aren't going to want to be here anymore. I hope it's not any of us. I hope we've made our decision to emotionally cut our ties from what we own, so that taking risk is not a problem. So that we can go and place our academies, our colleges, our hospitals, our conferences, all our institutions can mold themselves to the mission that's ahead, so that when the time comes, we're ready for it. And the time is right now. There were 5 frogs sitting on the log. 4 of them decided to jump off. How many were left? 5 frogs were left, because there's a big difference between deciding and doing. We love to decide. We love to take votes. We love to make decisions. But there's a big difference between doing that and doing. For 5 years, I belonged to an aviation organization that has good vision, that wants to do things, that makes decisions, and has acquired 4 aircraft. And for 4 years, all those 4 aircraft are still sitting in a hangar up here in the States. So I terminated my relationship with that organization this year. Deciding is not what it's about. It's about doing. Use the means that are within your reach. What can you use? What do you have? That's what you're only responsible for. And when you use that, you'll get more. Every month, I don't expect our denomination to act as flat as a small little supporting ministry might, because I have 1 foot in the church directing ADRA, another one as vice president in Caribbean Union College, and yet on the other side, I have 1 foot in supporting ministry, and I just love the combination. I love the unity. Elder Gordon, the unity is part of our thing. I see representatives here of several supporting ministries, educational work, and it's all about unity. It's all the same work. It makes no difference if you're on payroll or if you're a volunteer. It doesn't make any difference. And I love the combination of working with the 2 sides. In fact, it's kind of unique. I think I've been the only ADRA director in the world that's not really an employee of the church. And I certainly have been the only vice president of a college that is not an employee. And I believe that this unity is what's going to finish the work. And as we work together to accomplish the mission, not wondering which side is pulling which way, pulling all the same direction. But in our finances, at the aviation level, we have 2 schools, 2 secondary schools, 1 TV station, and we're opening aviation programs already. We purchased an airplane in Venezuela, one in Bolivia, 1 for Brazil next year. It's going rapidly, growing rapidly. The way we operate our finances is, and I know you can't do this at a denominational level, but we try to make sure we don't have any money left at the end of the month. Everything that comes in that month, we spend all of it. Because we don't mind going bankrupt. We can go to the Lord and say, Lord, we've used everything you've given us. We don't have any more for next month. If you don't have a miracle for us next month, we don't mind closing, but this is your work. You promised to give us what we need. Sufficient to the day is the evil thereof. You gave us money for this month, we've used it. We don't have any more for next month. And every month, somehow, it not only has enough, but as we move forward, and God seems to always do this to us, He never gives us anything ahead of time. He always gives it to us after we move forward. And so, and I went to Venezuela to buy an airplane. I didn't know what I was going to find. This was about 3 months ago. And I decided not to fly across. I decided to go across the river. I happened to be on the border of Venezuela, and I caught a bus all the way into town. It was cheaper than going back to town and making an international flight plan. So I just had this sense something's going to happen. I didn't know where to start looking. How do you find an airplane when there's no magazine to look in? You go from airport to airport to airport. Do you know an airplane? Do you know an airplane? It's like trying to buy a car, you know. I did that in Mexico one time. I wanted to buy a 4-door Toyota, and I couldn't find any for sale, so I stood at the big red light, and I just waited. And as the 4-door Toyota stopped at the red light, I said, excuse me, you want to sell your car? I found one, I did, and I bought it. I bought it for the hospital there in southern Mexico. Sometimes unorthodox, it pays off. But in any case, I didn't know what I was going to find. But I went to Venezuela. I crossed over. I took a bus. And I went to town, took my passport across, and I took it to the immigration. I knew the immigration officer in that town because I'd landed there many times. He said, "Mr. Gates, or Capitan, you can't come in by land. You can fly here. It's a port of entry. But this is not a port of entry to come by land." He said, "I can't sign your passport. If I'd suggest you turn around and go right back where you came from and fly in." And I thought, oh, shoot, I wasted all the 2 days and all that time. I could have flown in, and I wasted money as well, and I went to the little hotel for the night because I couldn't leave. And that night I was washing my clothes in a sink, and the Lord impressed me to go to the airport right away. And it was such a strong impression. Here I was washing my clothes. I had one pair of dry pants and shirt still left, and it was so loud, an impression. I said, okay, Lord, forget it. I'll stop washing clothes and I'll go to the airport. I said it out loud. I put on the last bit of dry clothes I had, caught a taxi, went to the airport. When I got there, I saw some men shining up a little beautiful, gorgeous aircraft. Four of them were waxing an airplane. And I said, well, maybe the owner of the airplane would give me some advice, you know, what I can do to buy an airplane. What's the procedure for getting my Venezuelan pilot's license? Because as chief pilot, I was going to help start the program there in Venezuela, train somebody in, and then move on to the next place. So I did talk to the engineer. He owned two helicopters and three airplanes. And he was telling me all kinds of good advice, and I began to feel so thankful to God that indeed I finally was getting some information. Who do I go see in the Ministry of Communication and Transportation? What building? Who's the captain in charge, the major that is in charge? I was writing all this down. And then I said, I need to buy an airplane. I just want a four-seater airplane, but I'm looking for such and such. I gave him the details. And he said, why don't you go down and see my friend at the end? I said, he can help you find an airplane. So I was grateful. I walked to the end of the airport, told him what I needed. He said, I'll send you an email and when I find an airplane for you. And I went back. My heart was all thrilled and happy. And then it's when he broke the news to me. I went back to thank the original friend, and he said, I've been thinking about what you said. You want to open a medical aviation program? A missionary aviation program? I said, yes. Well, he said, I probably have very little choice in this, but I feel impressed. I got to tell you something. Let me tell you the story of this beautiful little airplane. He said, have you ever heard of Moody Bible Institute? I said, oh, yes. He said, well, this airplane used to belong to them. They refurbished it for mission use, and they were flying it from Elizabethton, Tennessee, down to Brazil to use in a missionary aviation program. Their engine quit right overhead. It landed in the field and it bent the landing gear. They collected their insurance and they went home, and I bought it from the insurance company. I bought it for a song, he said. I replaced the landing gear. We found the engine had one little tiny push rod problem. He said, it didn't even scratch anything. We replaced it and it's working fine, he said, and we just took it out of U.S. registry and made it a Venezuelan registered aircraft for non-commercial use. And today we finished the paperwork and you walked through the door looking for a missionary airplane. He said, I don't have any choice, but I'd like to offer you this airplane. Already registered? He said, we didn't pay any duty on it because it was already in the country. I'll pass the savings on to you. I only had about a third of the airplane cost that I'd been saving for that project. So I put it down the next day, signed the papers, and then he said, we still need to use it for a couple of months. We'll let you know when we're ready for the rest of the money. So just about a month ago, they wrote to me and said, we're now ready for you to pay the difference. Well, it was $30,000, and I didn't have $30,000. So I went to my dad, and I said, listen, Daddy, the time has come to pay. I think we need to kneel and ask the Lord for guidance, because if we don't pay, they can sell a plane to anybody, but they want their money now, and we can't miss this opportunity that's God's airplane. We prayed, we discussed it together, and we said, you know what? Every time we've purchased an airplane, and we have four of them, every time we purchase an airplane, we've had to finance it somehow ourselves. And immediately, God would pay the bill. I said, I don't think he's going to be different with us this time. Don't you think we ought to finance it, get the $30,000 and go pay it? God will take care of it like he has on all the other ones. After looking at it, praying about it, we felt at peace with that. So we called Collegedale Credit Union. And Collegedale Credit Union happens to be a very vital part of our ministry. When I'm overseas, all I do is send an email and I tell them, I need $20,000. And they said, okay, consider it deposited. You can sign the papers when you get home from South America. They do that to me all the time. In fact, they take collections of all the employees and they deposit money into my account. So they're a vital partner. They have no charges. If there's ever an overdraft, no overdraft fee. They cover it. We know you'll take care of it when you get home. Sometimes between the money is coming from our ministry, by the time the check gets there, two different times. The money could be on the way, but the check gets there first, you know. So, in any case, we borrowed the $30,000. I went down and paid the bill. I got back to the States. I had an appointment in Vermont and Maine. And then the next weekend, I had an appointment in Walla Walla for chapel. I flew to Walla Walla. I was having chapel there. And that morning, I woke up and I told the Lord, this is your bill. We have to pay the debt in 30 days. It's already coming up on 1 month. And I said, you know, we have 60 more days to pay that bill. But this is not my bill. I don't have $30,000. This is your airplane. You led me to the plane. I'm absolutely confident. And God assured me, you did your part. Just let me do my part. Man, I was on air all day long. Just a piece of knowing God was in charge. You know, I didn't know anything was going to happen except that I knew it was going to happen, but I didn't know what. That afternoon, I spoke with my dad, and he said, today, we received $28,000. Funds to use as you wish. We don't very frequently get $28,000 checks. Our budget has gone from $200 a month to approximately $15,000 to $18,000 a month, but that's all spoken for. All the missionaries, all the fuel, all the maintenance expenses, everything that goes along with running two schools, all, you know, the food and so on, all of that, the medical work, but you can't use that to pay the airplane. This is in addition to our regular budget. The monies came in just like that. We have no doubt that God means what He says, that He will cover the needs of His work. These are not normal times we live in. It's time to sacrifice benefits as church workers. It's time to sacrifice extras. And it's time to do something. And I'm going to present that to you in just a minute. There are 793 credentialed missionaries and ministers in this union. I wrote the software for the SDA yearbook that you get on diskette. When I was at Caribbean Union College, we invented the software and wrote it as in our department for the SDA yearbook. And they bought it from us in the GC, and we renew it every year as part of our team members. So I went through the software this morning, and I just counted all the credentialed missionaries and pastors, and we have 793. Do you realize that if we, as credentialed workers for the Southern Union, gave up 10% of our salary, none of us would die, of course, you know that. We could still live on 90%. It just means there's a few sacrifices. We would have 200, this is based on a very conservative salary, we would have $237,900 a month that could be used. We could put up a satellite uplink 24 hours a day. I am thankful 3AB has been what they're doing, but guess what? I am disappointed that we can't do the same. What do you mean we can't do it? I was talking to Elder Follett, Pastor Follett came down, Philip Follett, when he was still vice president for that AGCN and AWR. He came down to dedicate one of our video production centers and a TV station. And I said, aren't we as a church going to also put up a satellite with 40 languages and do that work? We believe in that. We have universities. We have hospitals. They need special things. He said, no, we're cutting the budget. We're not increasing it. Please, if anybody listening, just the Southern Union with 10% of us, of all of us giving 10%, we would still survive. The Southern Union could have its own 24-hour uplink. And you know what that would do for our church members? When they hear that we as employees have given up 10% of our salary, man, they would start shoveling it in faster. That budget, you wouldn't even feel a 10%. The budget would go right up, because when church members who give the tithe and offering see what the leaders are doing, it's infectious. So I don't want to hear this stuff about we can't afford it. Okay, I'm going to finish with a proposal to you, because if I don't finish with action, then we're just frogs on a log. The majority of us, not all of us, but the majority, and I happen to be included in that majority because I'm a guest, are receiving per diems to be here. Elder Gordon mentioned that we have churches and we have companies. And this morning he told me that some of those companies are looking forward to building their own church. I would like to invite all of you today that are receiving per diems to give up half of your per diem. You won't die. It's not even part of your regular salary. Half of your per diem, and I'll sign my name at the top of the line, to help a company or two toward building a church. That's nothing. That's icing on the cake. I haven't even touched the cake yet. So those of you that are interested in giving up one half of your per diems for this week, for the time that you're here, if you receive a per diem, I would invite you to come forward and sign. We'll have a sign-up sheet. Just do it if you feel impressed, but this is what I'm talking about. Are you a frog on the log or are you in the water? It does take giving up something. There's no other way to do it. There's no other way to do it except giving up something. So 50% of the per diem to sign up to help build a church in the Southern Union. That's where I'm going to end today. And if you just enjoyed my talk and you went back inspired and happy, I'm sorry I was here. If it leads to sacrifice in your life, if it leads to, it means to changes that make something happen, there's a simple definition for leadership. Leaders make things happen. Are you one of them? I hope when Jesus comes back, he'll say, "Faithful. Welcome, faithful servant. You have been faithful over little, you'll be faithful over a lot." May God bless you today.